Something's going on in the woods. Something's going on.
They're not dogs. They're not coyotes. What could it be, right?
I had an encounter with a skunk ape, and it completely altered the course of my life.
I found a skull. I think you guys are going to want to come film this.
Put him out.
Sightings of a UFO hovering over a barn.
Millie woke up from a dream, and when I went into the bedroom, she said there's a monster on the wall.
They saw that the creature had run through a barbed wire fence. They were able to obtain hairs. They sent the hairs to their lab, and it came back as an unknown creature.
What is up, guys, and welcome back to the most bizarre show on the internet. I am the one that they call Shane.
And I am your big bad boo daddy, Warren Felix.
I'm happy that's you went with it.
That's a throwback from last week's episode.
All fear the boo daddy.
That's what she said.
So, I guess before we get way too off the rails this early in the show, we should probably at least hop into doing the news updates, fun house stuff, and then we can get into the episode, and then we can start getting off the rails, man. So, I guess the start for everything, nothing quite interesting, crazy going on. Just, of course, for anybody that hasn't caught it the last few episodes, we're going to keep promoting it until June 29th. We will be at Small Town Monster Fest 2. That'll be in downtown Canton, Ohio at the Doubletree by Hilton. Kids 12 and under are free. Everybody else, you guys will have to make sure that you guys grab your own tickets. And if you guys decide that you guys are coming, let us know, and then we'll know you by name, face, and we'll be able to say what's up to you at the event, because we'll have the full team there. It'll be me, Oren, Jenny, Gabby, the kids. So it'll be a lot of fun. Looking forward to seeing you guys out there. And again, mark your calendars. Don't forget to scoop them tickets.
And all the normal stuff, don't forget to follow Bizarre Encounters and Open Minds Media on Instagram and Facebook and YouTube and TikTok and the Discord and all the social medias. And also, don't forget to submit questions for Bizarre Inquiries, the Patreon exclusive mini show where you guys give us questions and we inquire about them.
And let our minds wander. I got to say it all fancy. That's the fun part about the intro, right?
It really adds to the effect.
It adds to the full effect because people don't get the show because we literally let our minds wander because it's like we'll start off on something. And by the end, we might be totally on something different. So
yeah, it's even more unhinged than this bullshit.
Yeah, because we have the opportunity to get unhinged. That's what the problem is. But if you guys have an encounter to report, you guys can report those to OMMEncounterReports@outlook.com. Don't have any to share with you guys this week, but if you guys submit some of those encounters, a couple different things I want to do with them. Of course, if you guys type them up, I can read them in the beginning of the episode, give you guys a shout out. If you guys record yourself telling your story and email it to me, then I can do a compilation episode at some point where Oren and I kind of discuss our opinions on people's different experiences and encounters, which I think would be a lot of fun. And then if you are just somebody who wants somebody to talk to, you don't want your story projected anywhere, you just want somebody to listen to you and not think that you're crazy, we're also here for you for that too. Just let us know, of course, and we can do a video call or something like that and be able to sit down and talk to you. And depending on how far you are, we can even possibly investigate it. But we can discuss all of that if you guys report your encounters to OMMEncounterReports@outlook.com. And if you guys want to support the show, a couple different ways to do so. Number one, and the best way of supporting the show, is through the Open Minds Media Discord. Over there, you get this show, you get Inquiries About Reality, you get Bizarre Inquiries, and any other random side stuff we do. I recently, not too recently now, probably like a month and a half ago, I updated the tiers, made it so there's more perks for the lower tiers, more perks for the upper tiers, and there's also a 7-day free trial for the $3 tier and the $5 tier. So if you guys want to check that out, you guys can get at least a free week trial to decide if you guys want to stick around. And if you guys decide to stick around, I greatly appreciate it. And to all of our current Patreon members, you guys rock, and you guys are the reason that we're able to keep doing the show and be able to pay for all the stuff we got to pay for in order to do the show, of course. And the other way you guys can support the show is through the Open Minds Media merch store. Over there, you will get things for, again, this show, Inquiries of Our Reality, Bizarre Inquiries, and a bunch of the other random designs I do that are non-podcast related, paranormal, cryptids, UFOs, all that kind of fun stuff. And I still have the promo code active. I know it's past April. I'll probably run until the end of May for you guys. Cryptid10, if you guys want to get 10% off and check out. And of course, if you guys join the Patreon, depending on which tier you are, each tiers have different levels of promo codes that you guys can use for the store. So if you guys are interested in joining both, make sure you guys join the Patreon first, and then you guys will get some exclusive discount promo codes. And to anybody who might possibly be starting a podcast, you might already have a podcast and you want to make things a little bit easier for yourself, or you're just starting off your podcast and you need a little bit of help, I am now offering podcast production services through Open Minds Media. So if you guys have any questions or anything that you guys might want some help with as far as editing, all of that kind of stuff, you guys can shoot me a message on Open Minds Media. Another thing that I'm interested in trying to do is for all the authors out there, if anybody would like an audiobook made, I can also work on that. I can do sound effects. I can either do it in my voice, your voice, whatever you guys prefer. Any of your guys' audio production needs, just shoot me a message again through Open Minds Media.
And a big shout out and thank you to our sponsors, our buddies Rick and Hans with I Know Squatch. Check them out for all your squatchy gear needs. And Joe at Cryptoteology, he's killing it as always with his wearable cryptid favorites.
And then Snarly Yao, don't forget to go and check out Dave over there. He's got a line of fantastic all-natural beard and body products. It's a smoky cedar scent with a hint of mint. Absolutely fantastic. I use it every single day for my beard, and it's one of my favorite parts of the day is putting it in my beard and being able to smell that minty, awesome, natural freshness.
And if you guys are in the West Virginia area, definitely check out Dave, a.k.a. the Snarly Yao. He puts on a lot of really cool cryptid-themed events. We always enjoy hanging out with him. We'll be up there in October for Cryptid Halloween 3. So if you guys can come out to any of his events, definitely worthwhile.
And if you guys decide to come out to that event, I've actually been talking to him a little bit, trying to coordinate some stuff, because as most of you guys know, Orin and I are probably going to be emceeing that, which means that we're going to be doing presentation and kind of running the stage for the whole time that the show's going. So just some new updates that he was mentioning for it. He has a couple new speakers. I'm not going to announce any names yet because I don't think he's dropped that yet. But another really, really cool component to it this year is he's going to have a haunted house in the building with us. It's going to be a way bigger venue. It's going to be a lot more awesome stuff going on. It's going to be a way louder system as far as everybody being able to hear the presentation great. And again, haunted house, can't go wrong with that. So guys, make sure you guys mark your calendars, because it's gonna be a lot of fun, and we'll of course drop some more info as we get closer to the date, of course. And moving into the affiliate links, for anybody that hasn't checked out the newest sponsor of the show, Oregonite, highly recommend checking that out. He has a lot of fantastic pieces that he makes completely himself that all have to do with basically taking in negative energy and putting out positive energy. And he makes different ones depending on what you need. He makes ones for productivity. He makes ones for happiness. Whatever you happen to be feeling, definitely go and check his stuff out. It's fantastic. And if you guys want to get 10% off, you guys can use code OMM at checkout. And that will give you, again, 10% off. On top of using the affiliate link, of course, don't forget to use the affiliate link. And moving on to Dimension Devices. For anybody who hasn't heard me talk about this time and time again, it is the all-in-one paranormal investigating device. Absolutely fantastic. I love it. I use it every time I go out. Constant new modifications for it. Constant new add-ons for it. And Barry over there likes to make it so that it's not going to be an outdated product in the next couple of years. So his intention is he just keeps adding new patches, new programming to the system itself. So if you guys are scared about a new generation coming out, that's not going to be the case. Definitely worth going and checking out. And the newest part about it is he said that everybody that uses the affiliate links, they receive 10% off. So if you guys have been thinking about getting one, but you wanted it to be a little bit cheaper, you guys can use our affiliate link and you guys will get 10% off. And just so everybody is fully aware, of course, Barry is over in the UK. On the website, it does convert through PayPal. So if you guys go and check out the website and you see that it's all in pounds, that's totally okay. As soon as you hit the PayPal thing to cash out, it'll show you all the prices converted into US dollars, of course. And if anybody has any technical questions on it whatsoever, Barry does run the Dimension Devices page, so he'll be able to answer any technical questions that you guys might have. And using those affiliate links greatly helps out the show. So we appreciate you guys for using them and checking it out.
And all this shit we've mentioned is in the link tree in the show description.
And then hopping into today's, hopefully at some point, going to be ridiculously unhinged episode. I did some of the research for the one last week, so this week we're going to keep on with our bouncing back and forth, essentially, of he does some research, I do some research, he does some research, I do some research. We throw a couple guests in the mix there. So this week, of course, is going to be another one that Oren wrote, also kind of staying in the Carolinas, because that seems to be where we're kind of fixated lately. But I guess I will pass it over to Oren to get into this awesome deep dive that he worked on this week.
Yeah, this one was kind of unintentionally focused on the Carolinas. I promise you guys the next thing I'm working on has nothing to do with the Carolinas. We're going way further away. But
at least last week was South Carolina. That's at least one perk. So we're not too fixated on North Carolina. They are the Carolinas, but at least they're two different states.
Everybody knows they're two completely different states. But
and we haven't touched South Carolina since the Lizard Man of Skateboard Swamp.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, which was a good episode. You guys should check that out.
That's one of the OGs from when you first started. So you guys got to go back and check that one out. before Oren was an official podcaster. Now he's enough episodes in. There's no doubt in my mind he's an official podcaster now.
Well, that's right. But anyway, if you guys listen to kind of our little recap I did for Encounter Quest, our buddy Jeff with Star Cruiser Studios, I was kind of talking to him at the event, and he is an awesome artist, does some really cool like cryptid art and like state maps with all the different cryptids and folklore and whatnot of each state. And he was talking about wanting to do one from North Carolina, but he wasn't super familiar with, you know, all the cryptids and whatnot. So, you know, I offered to kind of help him out with some of the notes that we've done for the show and whatnot. So kind of compiling those, I added to some of the stuff and kind of ended up with a kind of grab bag that I'm going to call Cryptids of North Carolina. So we are going to get into that tonight. And if you've got nothing else to add, I will go ahead and jump in.
Just one quick comment that I wanted to point out that I thought was really cool. I forgot to tell you before we started recording, actually. So I talked to Jeff from Star Cruiser Studios, and I don't know if you're going to be able to make it out to Squonkapalooza. Hopefully you can. Still crossing my fingers. But at least for our presentation, I told them that we're going to be doing Cryptids of Pennsylvania, and I got his full permission to be able to use his map and his pictures for the presentation to promote, one, a friend in the community, and two, have some fantastic art all kind of related to the maps. So I thought that might be kind of cool since you guys are friends that we got permission to be able to use his art for our presentation.
No, that's awesome. And all you listeners out there, if you're not familiar with his work, definitely check it out. He does some of the best like cryptid theme art I've seen in the community. I'm not just saying that because he's our buddy.
So. It's like old newspaper clipping style, which is what makes it really cool. Because in my opinion, it's like when you dig into a lot of this old cryptid stuff, most of the time it's old newspaper articles. So it kind of just like accompanies like the atmosphere and like the style of that, which is why I dig it so much, is because it's just that those are some of the best pictures you get of some of these cryptids are just newspaper articles. So it fits the theme, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So, all right, well, I will go ahead and jump into Cryptids of North Carolina. So we're going to cover three different cryptids tonight, and I'm going to start with the Lake Norman Monster. So Lake Norman is a man-made lake. It's about 40 miles north of Charlotte, North Carolina. It's got 520 miles of shoreline, which makes it the largest freshwater body of water in the state of North Carolina.
That's a big ass man-made lake. Like that's huge, man. 520 miles, like that's crazy. That was a project.
Yeah, it's massive. So, and like we said, it's man-made, and it was created between 1959 and 1964, and it was created by the Duke Power Company, kind of in order to provide electricity to the surrounding areas.
Was it? Did they create a dam to like block it off, and then the dam created like a new runoff somewhere else and created another lake? Is that kind of how it was created?
Yeah, exactly. And so it's fed by the Catawba River, but it powers like multiple hydroelectric generators. And there's also a nuclear facility called the McGuire Nuclear Station, which is kind of freaky, but it's like on the banks of the lake. So it was basically created to power, you know, these hydroelectric and nuclear facilities.
That makes it more interesting that it's a runoff water, though, because that means that it's not closed off where there could be just there's species that could come in from elsewhere. And if it's near a nuclear plant, all of that kind of weird stuff, man, like
we're getting into it.
It just opens up the possibilities if it's not a closed off lake, you know?
Oh, yeah. So just sit tight. We're getting there. So anyway, the lake was named after the former president of Duke Power. His name is Norman Atwater, and I'm assuming it's pronounced cock. It's spelled C-O-C-K-E, which
Cock.
I don't know why they didn't name it Lake Cock. I mean, that's so much funnier than Lake Norman, but anyway.
Flaccid Lake.
Yeah. So I think we should start a petition to change it to Cock Lake. But anyway, moving on. So the lake's kind of become like a popular destination for, fishermen and boaters and other tourists and things of that nature.
Talk about a tourist trap, man. How many fishermen would be like, let's go to Cock Lake?
Yeah. Good fishing there at Cock Lake.
Catch all the specimens.
Other than all this craziness, the lake has become kind of notable in recent years because there's supposedly a mysterious creature living there known as the Lake Norman Monster, or Normie.
So, Normie the Monster.
Yep. So descriptions of the Lake Norman Monster kind of vary a lot based on the encounter and the account and, whoever's, given the information. Some more recent reports claim that the creature kind of looks like a plesiosaur, which is kind of like the Loch Ness Monster type creature. But most eyewitnesses say that the creature is kind of long and grayish brown in color and resembles either an overgrown alligator or a huge like catfish type fish.
Does this run from the ocean like in, or does it run from like a lake outland?
So this is all like connected to various lakes and rivers. So this is Charlotte, North Carolina, which is probably like 4 hours inland. It's a couple hours from where we're at here in the middle of the state. It's like right on the kind of North Carolina, South Carolina border.
Just out of curiosity, did you ever pick up when researching plesiosaurs? Like, it seems like most of the accounts seem to be in freshwater, but like scientifically speaking, were they ocean dwellers or were they freshwater dwellers? Do you know offhand?
I have no idea. I did not dig that much into the.
I'm going to assume that they were freshwater
aspect of it,
just because any sighting of them seems to be ironically in freshwater. And even if they were saltwater creatures at one point, if they are still around, more than likely they probably adapted to be freshwater creatures. So I mean, just entertaining a possibility.
Yeah, and we know like sharks can, swim in rivers and fresh water and stuff like that. So I mean, it makes sense that after supposedly millions of years, these things would adapt.
Because I feel like if there's anything big left, more than likely it's in the ocean or it's running off from some really deep unknown. I don't want to say unknown because I feel like most lakes are known at this point, but like barely traveled to lake. You know what I mean? Like one that there's like nobody that ever goes there. That's the only place these things would be able to have like somewhat of a small breeding population.
Yeah, and an ecosystem and whatnot. But anyway, so jumping back in, like we said, most of the reports say that this thing looks like a big alligator or a big catfish. And some people claim
those
that...
Those are very different descriptions.
yeah, like the descriptions are all over the place. But some people say that it's even as large as like a compact car, which is pretty crazy. But one description that I thought was kind of interesting said that the creature was, quote, long and serpentine with scaly fins or flippers. So that kind of plays more into like the whole Nessie sea monster type thing. And one of the most famous sightings of the creature happened on May 20th, 2004. There was a group of students from Bain Elementary School in Charlotte. And they were taking like a boat tour of the lake, and multiple like teachers and whatnot on this tour said that they saw a large creature swimming under the boat, and they said that it, quote, had a striped body and squiggly tail. So I thought that was kind of an odd detail, but anyway, so moving on, the creation of the nickname Normie is credited to a local website designer, and his name was Matt Myers. So supposedly the story goes in the early 2000s, Myers and a friend were kind of discussing the possibility that there was some kind of monster living in the lake. And he stated, quote, if they, meaning Loch Ness, have Nessie, then ours should be Normie. And from then he kind of created a website called LakeNormanMonster.com, and this kind of brought more attention to the creature, and it gave a venue for like eyewitnesses to report their sightings and whatnot. So since the website went live, more than 100 sightings have been reported just to the website alone, and that's not including all the stuff that obviously wasn't reported to the website. All right, so moving on. There's a local fishing guide, and his name is Captain Gus Gustafson.
Gustafson. That's a mouthful.
The most like sailor captain name I've ever heard. We need to recommend that to our buddy Michael Thompson for his next book.
Dude, he better throw that name in there. I mean, he's just missing out if he's not taking the opportunity.
But anyway, this Captain Gustafson is kind of considered to be the originator of a lot of these tales of the monster. Because he's got an outdoor column that appears in the Charlotte Observer newspaper, and he's written about the creature several times in this column. He's also appeared on multiple television programs discussing the creature, but people have kind of noted that a lot of his accounts kind of seem kind of jokey and tongue-in-cheek, and that's led many people to wonder if he's just kind of, you know, spinning tall tales and fishing tales.
I mean, yeah, thing, I was going to say, he is a sailor. He's creating sailor stories.
Exactly. So kind of getting into some of the theories on what this thing could actually be. When discussing the creature, Captain Gustafson stated, and this is a quote, "We don't really know where the monster came from. One theory is that it was a monstrous hybrid catfish, a cross between an Arkansas blue catfish and a larger species of catfish that they brought in from somewhere else. Some scientists, shortly after the lake was filled in the 1960s, were experimenting with crossing these two types of fish, and some of the young catfish somehow got away from their holding pen." So that's kind of more like the catfish description that we were talking about earlier.
I just want to throw something in real quick while we're at the catfish theories. And I got another theory on this thing too. But while we're talking about catfish, at least when you get into like cryptid catfish, I mean, this thing has I'm assuming has a pretty good sized body of water. But when you get down to like the Amazon, for example, I believe it's called like the red catfish or something along those lines. But it's basically like a cryptid catfish that's usually seen supposedly around like 6 feet long. It's fucking huge from like the supposed pictures I've seen of it. So, I mean, at least in freshwater, it's not unheard of to see these giant catfish stories. Like these appear all over the world in like these giant bodies of fresh water. So, I mean, specifically in the Amazon, there's a lot of them with giant cryptid catfish.
And, you know, a plesiosaur living in a man-made lake is one thing, but to me, it's pretty easy to believe there's just a big fucking catfish in there, or a small population of big fucking catfish, you know?
I mean, you got, like, ocean gigantists. I mean, if you have a big enough lake, I mean, assumably you'd have some type of, like, lake gigantists, because when it comes to water, like, the pressure on the body's different, so it gives everything the ability to be able to get bigger. So, I mean, that's where you hear about all this stuff with, like, goldfish, for example. That the bigger of body of water you put them in, bigger tank, the bigger they'll get. It's because there's less specifications on how big the body gets, depending on how big the body of water is that these things are seen in. So, I mean, the catfish is going generations and generations in a giant body of water when they're normally like small river dwellers. Then, of course, they're going to start getting bigger after generations, you know?
Well, yeah, and kind of piggybacking off of that, Gustafson said that in 1994, a man caught an Arkansas blue catfish in the lake, and it weighed 85 pounds and was over 50 inches long. So, you know, that's not like massive, like monster size, but that's a pretty big fucking fish, you know?
I mean, the other thing with catfish too, is, I mean, one, they're bottom feeders. So you're not going to see these things on the surface very often. But one thing that catfish do is they like taking in like a big breath of oxygen. So they'll do this thing where they'll come up to the surface and basically just take in a giant gulp of air and then go back down. So I mean, that could be a lot of where these giant catfish sightings are, is when the catfish go up to take that gulp of air and then come back down.
I think like the catfish theory, I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but that's I think what the most likely theory is. But like we said earlier, the other popular one is some sort of alligator type creature. And there have been reports of unusually large. So there have been reports of unusually large alligators in Lake Norman and its surrounding lakes. And these go back like several years. In 2001, somebody captured a video of an alligator sunning itself on the banks of Lake Wiley, which is like the next lake downstream from Lake Norman. So we know there's alligators in this area. And this phenomenon has kind of baffled a lot of experts, because the lake is supposedly too far inland and would get too cold in the winter for alligators to survive there. But it's been theorized that since, you know, there's all these nuclear facilities and hydroelectric plants and whatnot, that the waters could have been warmed through that and they could be warm enough for an alligator population to survive year round.
I mean, those things got to give off some kind of like pitch or frequency when they run too. So I almost wonder if like that pitch or frequency that these electric plants or nuclear plants give off would cause it so that the lake wouldn't freeze as easy because it's constantly in like a state of like vibration. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I didn't think about that, but that would totally make sense. I mean, with the dam and these different hydroelectric and nuclear plants, I mean, that makes a lot of sense.
And more than likely, if it is, it might be a combination of the two that, like, the reports are different as far as, like, some people see it this way, some people see it this way. Maybe there's a combination of maybe there are some bigger alligators, maybe there's a couple bigger fish, and people are having a combination of both and then thinking that it's all the same creature.
Well, like we talk about all the time, I mean, more than one thing can be true at a time. So I think, you know, you very well could be, it's more than one thing that people are seeing. And like you said, just lumping it all together of, oh, it's the Lake Norman monster. But some people have claimed that the creature could be a giant snakehead fish, a sturgeon, or some sort of freshwater eel. And the giant snakehead fish theory is considered by a lot of people to be most likely like right up there with the catfish. Because one of these huge snakehead fish was actually captured in this Lake Wiley, the nearby lake, several years ago. So that's some of the kind of more popular theories. And unless you have something else, I'm going to jump into kind of conclusions, miscellaneous, some of the more out there things.
Just to throw in one more theory on this one. So I recently had Beyond Top Secret Texan on Increase of Our Reality talking about this concept of like giant serpents seen in like land, air, and sea. Like you have like the astronauts, they'll see these giant weird serpent things in the sky. You'll see constantly these like accounts of like big snake-like things in the oceans coming up on land, specifically in like rivers and stuff. And when you get into like some native lore as far as like America goes, because you hear about a lot of those stories down in South America, but as far as like North America goes, the natives would have this whole story about the Uktena, which was like the horned or antlered serpent. And more often than not, it was referred to as being seen near waterways. So, I mean, if you take in the fact that the natives kind of created their own lore and theories about it, and then you have people in South America that also have these accounts of these giant freshwater snakes that are usually seen like off by the rivers and stuff. I mean, they could be dealing with the same thing, and it's just two different pieces of folklore that have been connected to it. And maybe there's not much left up in North America. Maybe there's more left in South America, and they're a species that's slowly dying off. But I just, you still got to entertain the possibility of the giant snake theory and the fact that there is historical documentation of the possibility of there being giant snakes in North America, with all the Native American legends of specifically the Cherokee with the Uktena, for example.
Well, not only that, so there's Native American legends in this area, like the Catawba River area, that claim that there were large snakes or these giant leeches in the river. And that kind of gets back to Moon-Eyed People stuff, where, you know, the Cherokee had this legend, where, you know, the Moon-Eyed people lived on one side of the river, the regular people lived on the other side of the river, and there was this giant leech that lived in the river. So, I mean, yeah, exactly like you said. I mean, all this stuff is kind of all tied up together. And so kind of moving on a little bit, some of the more outlandish theories, you know, people think that maybe the nuclear waste or pollution from the facilities there on the lake could be responsible for like alligators or normal sized fish growing to these monstrous proportions. And also a rare type of freshwater jellyfish has been discovered in the lake. The species was previously not known to inhabit the lake, and it's unknown how the jellyfish got there. So kind of like you were saying at the top of the show, there's these weird things in the lake that nobody knows why it's there. Nobody knows how it got there. So
freshwater runoff, man. And I mean, you definitely got to entertain the possibility of there being some mutation caused by the nuclear plants. As I mean, I don't know if things typically get giant and somewhat stay the same, but it seems like a lot of the research I've done into like Chernobyl, for example, it's usually like deformities as far as like an extra leg or like an extra tail or a couple extra ears. It's usually stuff like that. I don't really see too much stuff as far as like gigantism as far as like the nuclear stuff goes.
That's kind of the pushback to this. Like you said, that's not really how like nuclear pollution works. But anyway, so jumping into maybe some stuff that's a little out there, but I thought was interesting. So like we said, this lake is huge. And I might be going on a rabbit hole here, but just getting into some numerology type stuff that I thought was interesting. So the lake is 33 miles long, 9 miles wide, has a surface area of more than 50 square miles, and its average depth is 33 feet. So that's a lot of 33s, a lot of threes, a lot of nines, which we all know in like occult circles are very important numbers. So I don't, that's probably just reading too much into it, but whenever I see those numbers pop up in research, it always like alarm bells, you know?
Whenever I see the nine too, I think of the 369 concept, because you nine down and it turns into six and three.
Yeah. And kind of piggybacking off of that, this I thought was pretty wild. So like we said, this is a man-made lake. And similar to like the land between the lakes where all the dogman activity happens, when they made this lake, like several communities were flooded in order to make this lake. So they covered up, you know, all sorts of communities and graveyards and Native American burial sites. So does that have anything to do with this big fish monster thing? Probably not, but I thought it was at least kind of interesting to point out. So
I mean, it definitely leads into some paranormal possibilities. I mean, and I mean, who knows, man? It seems like a lot of the time with the Native American burial grounds, there's some type of like curse or spell or something to them. And typically you get the like dog man or like the weird ground being stuff. But if you flood out a Native American burial site, maybe you get a different effect. Maybe you get some type of serpentine or some like water being at that point. Because how is a land being going to protect something underground? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So anyway, kind of rounding that out, that was just some more off the wall things, but stuff that I thought was at least interesting to kick around a little bit.
I mean, I definitely like all the different theories and ideas on it, but honestly, if I had to pick any of them, I'd probably go with the mix between a catfish and giant alligators, like cross being seen. That's probably the one that I go
like
the most
with. Catfish theory. That's my favorite one. All right. So unless you got anything else on Normie, we are going to jump over to another cryptid.
Normie's too normie for me. Let's roll on to the next one. All right. Got the tall boy today, I see.
Yeah, switching it up. I figured that way I wouldn't have to refill during the middle of the show.
That's what I was going to say. At least now you don't have to go get that second beer because you already got it.
Exactly. All right. So the next cryptid we're going to talk about, this account's going to be a little bit shorter than the last one, but it's a cryptid known as Nobby. And so this comes from Cleveland County, North Carolina. And this county has a long history of kind of strange creature sightings. And these kind of began in the winter of like 1978, 1979. And there are several sightings of a 6 to 7 foot tall ape-like creature. And in December of 1978, the first documented report came from an 88-year-old woman named Minnie House. And according to Minnie, she claimed that she saw the creature near her home and that it made these like strange grunting noises. And in January of 79, more than a dozen other people had reports. And one of these reports came from a hunter. And he said that while he was out hunting, he saw a large bipedal creature with gray hair, which is kind of interesting in Bigfoot type circles. You don't hear many about many reports of gray haired Bigfoot. But anyway, he said this like gray-haired Bigfoot-type creature walked in front of him on a trail while he was hunting and disappeared into the woods. And since most of the sightings of this creature were clustered around a mountain known as Carpenter's Knob, and that's like K-N-O-B.
What's up with the names in this? You got Minnie House and Carpenter Knob.
Yeah, like all the names and all of this sound made up as hell.
They sound like inanimate objects.
Gustafsson. Yeah. So. But anyway, so since it was seen near Carpenter's Knob, the media began referring to the creature as Nobby. So we got Normie and now we got Nobby.
I want to point out something as far as the gray-haired Sasquatch, just a possibility of what that could be. I mean, definitely there's different colorations of things, so that's always definitely a possibility. But another side possibility is dried mud and hair, because once mud starts to dry, it kind of turns this grayish color. So, I mean, that's definitely a possibility. It's just a muddy Sasquatch dries in the sun and looks gray.
No, that I hadn't really thought about that, but no, that makes perfect sense. So this is kind of cool. I think you'll get a kick out of this. So during this time period where all these sightings of this creature were going on, a Bigfoot researcher named Jim Hollingsworth came to North Carolina, and he kind of joined in the search for this Na'vi creature. And he allegedly brought with him, and I quote, audio recordings supposedly made of a Bigfoot in the Pacific Northwest. When he played the recordings for the folks near Carpenter's Knob, many agreed that the sound was similar to the noises they had recently heard in their own neighborhoods and which they attributed to the creature.
I'm assuming and it's the Sierra sounds.
I couldn't find anything that specifically said it was, but it's got to be our boy Ron Moorhead and his Sierra sounds, don't you think? I mean, it's got to be.
Especially that time period, too. It's got to be him. Because who else was recording audio for Bigfoot before that?
In the Pacific Northwest. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was pretty cool. You know, we've both met Mr. Moorhead, super nice guy. His wife is awesome, too. So I thought it was pretty funny that it showed up kind of here in these notes. All the way across the country.
Dude, we still got to get him on the show because we both met him in person. We both had conversations with him. I'm surprised we haven't got him on the show yet. We got to make sure we do that.
Well, no, it would be an honor to have him come on. But anyway, so kind of fast forwarding, more than 30 years after, you know, the first wave of sightings in the 70s, there's this new wave of Knobby sightings. And in 2010, a Cleveland County resident named Tim Peeler reported seeing another large ape-like creature. And he shared his account with like several local media outlets. But kind of like with Normie, it's been noted that his accounts are kind of jokey and have a comedic tone and very tongue-in-cheek. So it's also been speculated that he just fabricated these accounts. However, in March of the next year, 2011, a local couple named Thomas Byers and Carolyn Wright claimed that they also saw this same type of creature. They were driving near South Mountain State Park when they saw a large creature running across a field toward the road. And Byers said that the creature was, again, 6 to 7 feet tall, this time with brown fur, which could be, you know, kind of like you were saying about the mud caked in the fur. And it was walking upright. So, you know, this is very traditional type Bigfoot report. He also noted that the creature, quote, had an odor that smelled something like a cross between a skunk and sewage. So, you know, that's just par for the course with Bigfoot sightings, you know, the sulfurous odor.
I mean, South Carolina's halfway down. You kind of got some of the Bigfoot from the north and some of the skunk ape from the south. So, I mean, you got to meet up in the middle somewhere.
Yeah, and maybe this is where they did, at Carpenter's Knob. But
They got their knob touched at Carpenter's Knob and created a mixed species.
They need to be printing up t-shirts. But anyway, I thought it was kind of interesting. This fellow, Thomas Byers, he said that the next spring he saw another creature that was either the exact same one or a very similar one. And this sighting allegedly took place only like 2 miles from his original sighting. So that's basically all I've got for Knobby. Not a whole lot to this one, just kind of run-of-the-mill Bigfoot Sasquatch type stuff. I mostly just included it because of the Ron Moorhead thing. But anyway, you got anything on this one?
I mean, I'm always cool with the Sasquatch stories. I kind of threw my theories and everything on it as far as the possibility of the gray hair. But I mean, I definitely think the Sasquatch is out there. So I mean, like...
Yeah. I mean, other than that, it's pretty much just pretty standard Sasquatch stuff.
Typical localized Sasquatch story, which are always fascinating, of course.
Yeah, but anyway, so I saved what I think is the best, most interesting cryptid for last. So we will jump into the Boojum, if you're ready.
I dig it. I like the name already. The Boo Daddy and the Boojum.
There you go.
Read it off, so, Boo Daddy.
In kind of western North Carolina, Blue Ridge Mountains area, there's this subsection of the mountain range known as the Balsam Mountains. And we've discussed this mountain range recently. If you or the listeners don't remember from where, we're going to touch on it in a minute. So just keep that in mind, the Balsam Mountains. So this mountain range has a mountain in it called Eagle's Nest Mountain. And this is in Haywood County, kind of near the Maggie Valley, Waynesville type area. And for hundreds of years, the folklore of this area has claimed that the mountain is home to this strange creature known as the Boojum. So allegedly, the Boojum is 7 to 8 feet tall. He's a bipedal creature, and he resembles a cross between a human and a bear.
Like a Sasquatch?
Yeah, it's a bear. So the creature is supposedly covered in shaggy brown or gray. Thought that was kind of interesting.
Dried mud.
Yep, and has a human-like face. And some people in their accounts even said that the eyes had like a sad, soulful look to them. And the creature's vocalizations supposedly sound like a combination of like this strange moaning or grunting and then just like screaming. And some people have described it as, quote, a mix between a hooting owl and a monkey. And I thought the owl thing was interesting just because of the whole owl paranormal aspect.
I mean, on top of that, too, you got all the Sasquatches that people supposedly hear mimicking owls.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard a few stories of people saying that they'll hear like owls cooing and then they'll hear somebody try to make the noise and then they'll like cough in the middle of it and they continue the coo.
So, yeah. So up to this point, we're kind of in typical Sasquatch territory, but we're going to add some interesting wrinkles here for the Boojum. So the creature is supposedly obsessed with shiny objects like gemstones that he finds in the mountains.
Ooh, shiny and, object.
Yeah, and glass bottles. And it's said that he, you know, finds these gemstones in rivers and caves and whatnot, and he puts them in the bottles and hides them in his cave where he lives. So we got Bigfoot-type creatures living in caves. So there's that. So other than this infatuation with shiny objects, the Boojum is also said to frequently spy on young women as they bathed in mountain streams. So he's a nasty bitch on top of it.
What's he collecting in them bottles, bro?
I have no idea. Cannot confirm nor deny. But anyway, these women often reported not noticing the creature, but then they'd like turn around and he was standing by the water's edge and then making grunting or moaning sounds.
Like I told you, what's he storing in them bottles?
Yeah. And so other accounts have stated that these women were out like walking in the woods and whatnot, and the Boojum approached them while they were either walking or in some cases picking berries. And that gets back to the whole missing 411 thing. A lot of these reports happen, you know, with berry picking or berry fields. So that ties into the whole missing 411 Bigfoot creatures connection. So
that's what's actually happening is the Boojum is taking women and he's saying, I'm a Boojum and I need to boo come.
It sounds like that's what he's doing in his glass bottles. But anyway, a lot of these stories of the Boojum kind of grew in popularity in the early 1900s. And this happened because a local businessman, his name was S.C. Satterwhite, I believe is how it would be pronounced.
Satterwhite. Talk about weird-ass names today, man. Like,
yeah, that one's a tongue twister. There's way too many letters in that. But anyway.
There's a couple silent ones that don't look like they belong there at all, like the TH in the middle.
We're just going to call them S.C. So S.C. built the Eagle's Nest Hotel on the mountain. And as soon as this hotel opened, the guests started reporting hearing like strange noises. And when they're out walking around the grounds, they said that they just, you know, experience a strange feeling like they were being watched. And some people even said that they like caught brief glimpses of this thing like rustling in the trees. So the owner feared that the Boojum's presence would kind of scare off hotel guests. So he organized hunts for the creature, but allegedly no was ever found. So that's kind of the background, the setup for the whole Boojum.
Hide and seek master, but, man. What can I say? You're never going to find him if you don't want you to find him.
Hide and seek master baiter, if you will.
She said.
Both of them. So anyway.
I felt that needed both sound effects at the same time. I needed a bra and a that's what she said.
We got a twofer. So the most famous story about the Boojum kind of revolves around this young woman whose name was Annie. And supposedly one day Annie was bathing in one of these mountain streams and she was approached by the Boojum. But rather than being afraid and running off, she was, you know, kind of drawn to this creature.
She made him her boo daddy.
Yeah. Oh, he becomes her boo daddy. Spoiler alert. So Annie and the Boojum like started a relationship, and Annie eventually left her family to live with the Boojum as his wife. So between Abkhazia and Judicola and the Boo Hag, and this week, we've been on a roll here with people fucking things that aren't humans. Like, we're like 4 for 4 here recently.
I mean, are they Nephilim, man? I mean, definitely a possibility, man.
Keep that one in the chamber. We're getting to it. So after making Annie his bride, the Boojum still was obsessed with shiny objects, which just proves like men are still all about their hobbies, even after they settle down with their woman, still want to pursue their hobbies. But anyway, so he would disappear for days at the time hunting gemstones.
Ooh, shiny rock. Annie,
yeah. And when his wife, Annie, wanted him to return home, she would go out into the woods and call for him to return. And these calls supposedly sounded like the screeching of a wild animal mixed with the hooting of an owl.
I really was hoping you were going to mimic some kind of sound. I was like, come on, do it.
Maybe I'll do it at the end when I do my sign-off thing.
But it's anyway, a mix of so animals with a hoot, so it's like a wow.
I don't know if I can top that one out.
Anyway, there wasn't that much enthusiasm behind that one, but you get the point.
So we got owls popping up again, and this I thought was kind of cool. Supposedly, this story is the origin of the term hootenanny. They refer to her as Hootenanny. And for people who don't know, a hootenanny is like a southern rural term for a party or gathering. A lot of times there's music involved, but supposedly that term comes from this story. And I never knew that prior to researching this.
Dude, I'm from the north, obviously. I'm from Michigan, and I use that term all the time. I knew it was a southern term, but yeah, I had no idea where the origin of that was.
Now you know where it comes from, straight out of cryptozoology.
What a hoedown of a hootenanny.
Yeah, so I thought that was pretty cool. But anyway, on April 22nd of 1918, the Eagle Nest Hotel mysteriously burned down. And some of the locals have speculated that the owner succeeded in killing the Boojum in one of these hunts and that Annie set the hotel on fire in revenge. But that's just, you know, speculation, really nothing to back any of that up.
I was going to ask, is there any legitimacy behind the existence of Annie in the first place?
I don't know.
It's hard to, once you get back to like early 1900s and before that, because it's like people weren't documenting like their birth records. Like you're lucky. And
especially if this girl left at a young age to go supposedly live in the woods with whatever this thing was, you know,
there wasn't a system yet, man. She couldn't have been entrapped within the system.
No. So another legend says that late in her life, Annie returned to her family and she brought with her a bundle of the Boojum's gemstones, just, you know, kind of to give them something to help support themselves. And this I thought was interesting. In a variation of that story, Annie is said to have buried the gemstones before her death, and she now watches over them as a spirit of the woods. So I thought that was kind of cool.
I'm kind of mixed up at the fact that I was really going to think that there was some kind of baby involved here.
Well, it's funny you say that. So there is speculation that they could have produced children, procreated, whatever, because there are still sightings of these type creatures in the area to this day.
Or their cousins. They're cousins of it. Because the Boojum could have had brothers and sisters. I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, there's a local like photographer and self-proclaimed mountain man. His name is Carl Mims. And he said, quote, there are two crossings on 215, I'm assuming that's a road, where Boojum has been seen crossing the road. This is really cool, I thought. I've had songbirds block my path, calling at me until I stopped all movement. They quit calling. I could feel a heightened sensory effect. Listening and watching, I could hear and see movement in the trees. Once it moved through, the birds flew away. And this is straight out of like Oz Factor, you know, a lot of the Bigfoot encounters that we hear about where like the all forest activity ceases, this strange calm and silence, straight out of that.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
So I thought that was kind of cool. So do you have anything before we kind of jump into some connections and conclusions and things of that nature?
I mean, definitely fascinating story. Shares a lot of likeness with a lot of stuff. But again, that's when it kind of gets back into like, if there was a possibility of them having offspring and you get into the whole Nephilim theory, and maybe this thing was aware of the fact that it may have been some kind of descendant of this, then of course, you know, it wouldn't want anybody to know that it has offspring. Otherwise, assumably those offspring would be hunted down and killed. So maybe they purposely left it out of the story and they didn't want any normies aware of that. They let only them see them, and then the offspring lived off in the caves or in the back or whatever, you know.
I'm glad you brought up the whole Nephilim thing. Because do you remember our recent Juddicolor Rock episode?
Of course.
So for our listeners that might not have heard that episode,
go back and listen right now. Just pause this episode, go back, listen, then come back for the rest.
Yeah, it was like 3 or 4 episodes ago. It's pretty recent. But anyway, Juddicolor is an entity in Cherokee folklore that was described as like a hideous giant that inhabited the Balsam Mountains, which is the same sub-region of mountain range where the Boojum was supposed to have inhabited.
Hey, Juddicolor supposedly had offspring. What if this...
Just wait. Just wait. keep that one on the back burner. So one legend about Juddicolor and the Juddicolor Rock is this big boulder that has all these engravings and carvings on it. The engravings are ancient. And nobody really knows how they got there. But one legend about the rock states, quote, and I wish I had had this quote when we did the episode. I found it looking at Boojum stuff. But anyway, quote, the markings were made by the giant named Juddicolor, who left the drawings when he leapt down from his perch high up in the Great Balsam Mountains into the valley below. And this is kind of cool, too. Juddicolor is also associated with a lot of other locations in this area. There's one legend that states that Juddicolor resided on a mountain called Tennessee Bald. And the Cherokee name for that means, quote, at the white place. And I thought this was really interesting because this Tennessee Bald Mountain is named Bald because at the top of it, there's a roughly 100-acre bare spot on top of the mountain. So, like, no trees, nothing, just, like, basically a grassy plain, which kind of got me wondering, you know, we talk about possibilities of, you know, where mountains were places for communing with the gods. Could it be a UFO landing site? That ties back into the Nephilim connection, I thought.
Like I said, there's definitely the possibility of, one, them coming down from that mountain. Two, there's the one possibility that Juddicolor, remember when I was talking about the episode, that he may have taken multiple wives, and who knows how long these things live for. So this could also just be him taking another wife, or it could also be one of the offsprings of that wife that we were talking about when we were talking about Juddicolor, when he had an offspring of Juddicolor's offspring.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's this other legend that says Juddicolor lived in a cave. There we go, caves again.
Mm-hmm.
On another mountain in this area known as the Devil's Courthouse. And this mountain is located in the Pisgah National Forest. So National Forest again. And also, you know, called the Devil's Courthouse. This gets back to what I talk about all the time with these locations with devil in the name having some sort of like Bigfoot type connection.
I'm just going to assume from now on that national parks are literally just reservations for Sasquatch. Like, I'm pretty sure the government just classifies them at that.
It's like Jurassic Park for Sasquatches.
Yeah, they're like, you guys can go in. You guys can only go on the outside. Because with the Native American reservations, it's like, obviously, you're fully aware of them. You can't go into their property. But this one, it's a reservation, but they can't make it look like a reservation. So they got to let you go a little bit in there. But if you get too far and you're out of our territory, that's not our jurisdiction anymore, and have fun with them squatches.
Yeah, and then you're going to get scooped up and missing 411'd. But anyway, we kind of hit on all this, but these connections between the Boojum tales and the Juddicolor tales, is there a connection between these two creatures? And, you know, piggybacking off of that, that would mean, is there a connection between the Boojum and Nephilim? Because the Cherokee, like we said, described Juddicolor as this hideous giant, but, you know, the later white settlers described the Boojum as more of like a Bigfoot or wild man type creature. But Juddicolor, you know, was said to have seduced and produced children with a human woman, and the Boojum was said to have been in a relationship and possibly made children with Annie. So at some point, we've got to stop considering things coincidences and think that people might have just been, you know, saying what actually happened, like we talk about all the time.
Like I said, either two different descriptions of the same story or this is his offspring story. They're both definitely possibilities.
Yeah. So that's basically all I got for that. Just a few little odds and ends. in this area in Waynesville, North Carolina, there's a brewery called Boojum Brewing Company. So definitely got to check that out next time I'm rolling through that area. But
if I ever make it to North Carolina, we both got to go, because I at least got to go check it out because of the name. I mean,
take some pictures or something, get a koozie. But anyway, that's all I had for the Boojum. I tried to save the best for last. I thought that had some cool connections with recent stuff we've done. So yeah, like I said, I promise. Next thing I do will not be North Carolina related. But.
Let's see. What do we got on the docket? We got Canada for next week. Then we're going to go to Norway. And then we still got to come around to the Moon-Eyed People stuff. So we just got a little bit of diversity getting mixed in the next couple weeks. And then we'll probably have some guests here and there, because I got a handful of people that I'd probably be interested in having come on the show. Just got to set up dates and stuff. So yeah, that's kind of where we're looking for the next couple weeks, month or two, whatever it happens to be.
So, yeah, that's all I got for cryptids in North Carolina tonight.
Absolutely fantastic, man. I mean, starting from the beginning to the end, it's not like you put them in an order. They're all some pretty good, solid stories. It was just a matter of, like, the middle one was kind of just the filler so that you could spend more time on the first story and the last story.
Yeah, you know, and I definitely wanted to end with, you know, the whole Boojum Nephilim Judicula thing. So, like, as I was researching this story, I could not believe all the connections, like we said, to recent stuff we've been talking about. So
I still can't get over the names. They're great names. You got Normie, Nobby, and
the Boojum.
The Boojum. The Boocum. The Boojum. The Boocum, depending on your experience, I guess. And with that, of course, if you guys enjoyed this episode or the show as a whole, don't forget to leave a review or rating for the show on iTunes or Spotify. Greatly appreciate it. You guys doing that type of stuff will continue to boost the show up in the algorithms, make it so more people are able to see the show, make it so the community will keep growing, make it so that we can get more suggestions for episodes, get bigger guests on the show, have more people report encounters. It's beneficial for everybody. We want to see the community grow. We want to see you guys grow the community with us and become part of our community. So guys, don't forget to leave those reviews, ratings, iTunes, Spotify, and of course, if you guys are nice enough to leave us a 5-star review, if you guys think we deserve it, then we will read on the show and give you guys a big shout out. And you guys can also share the show through word of mouth. Don't forget about that too.
And you guys know the drill. Do all the internet things. Reach out to us through email, social media, the submission forms, the Discord, all that good stuff. You can share fan art, have a conversation, be a guest, have us as a guest on your show, or sponsor the show. So just get up with us somehow.
And every single link, affiliate link, anything that we've mentioned throughout the show is all available in the link tree, which is available down in the show description. I have been the one that they call Shane.
And I've been Big Bad Boojum. Daddy, Orin Felix.
Boojum, Boocum, Daddy, Orin Felix.
Heyo.
Heyo. And guys, don't forget, because I got to tell you every single episode, because I love you guys, and I want you guys to say your true, authentic, original selves. Always, always stay bizarre. Bizarre. Bizarre.